were when we dropped our outerwear collection and we did £1 million in revenue in an hour. That was a really big moment.
Welcome back to Series 11 of 40 Minute Mentor, your pocket-sized career mentor on a mission to raise aspirations and inspire the next generation of category-defining founders. From purpose-led entrepreneurs to world-class investors and even Olympians, you'll learn firsthand from today's successful leaders on what it takes to be brilliant, all in just 40 minutes. Today's 40-Minute Mentor is Morgan Fowles, CEO of sustainable activewear and athleisure brand Tala. Many of you will have come across Tala before, either via this podcast when we chatted to its founder, Grace Beverly, on Series 5, through the amazing press that they receive, or from their fantastic social media presence that they've built over the years. After a whirlwind career in fashion, including being part of the exec team at Thomas Pink Shirtmaker and COO at Spoke, Morgan joined Tala in 2021 and stepped into the CEO role in 2023. Tala has been through an amazing growth journey over the last few years, so I can't wait to dig into Morgan's experience at Tala and her previous career and find out what's on her radar for 2024 and beyond. So, Morgan, we've known each other for a while. This is super exciting to get you on the podcast, and I just wanted to say a massive thank you for joining us. So how are things?
Yeah, really well. Thank you for having me. It's lovely to see you again.
Oh, well, the pleasure is all mine. And I've seen your story evolve. I remember when you moved to Tala, and it's just this really wonderful brand. I had such a great conversation with Grace. I'm super excited to hear how the business has evolved. But before we dig into all of that, let's warm you up with some quick fire questions so our audience can get to know you a bit better. So please finish the following sentences after me. Question one, the most memorable day in my career was when?
Most memorable day was probably the day I got my first sort of big promotion. I was working in New York at the time for PVH, and it was a quick moment. It happened in the course of sort of a big restructure. So my group president came to talk to me, and you know, she had to have a lot of conversations that day. And so in the context of how fast it was, I think I remember every single thing about that moment.
Fantastic. One word that others would use to describe me is?
Wise.
Wise. Oh, that's a really good one. And perfect for a podcast all about mentorship. We are looking forward to hearing more of your wisdom.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure at all, Morgan. We want pure wisdom in the next 40 minutes. Next question. My biggest failure to date is?
I mean, I've had a few, but I think probably what they have in common is worrying too much.
I think that's something we can all probably relate to. I'm a warrior. My mother's a warrior. My wife says that I get that from her. It's sometimes not a bad thing, but I'd say it does get in my way sometimes. So I can completely relate to that.
I think it's an important part of the process, right? You've got to like sit in moments to resolve your way out of them. But it's a question of how long you sit in those moments, right?
So true. Yeah, no, absolutely. And knowing when to be decisive. Yeah, what you don't want to do is have analysis paralysis. One of my friend's mums once used this description, don't get stuck in a vortex of anxiety. And she said it because there were certain things where she would just loop around and around and around, the worrying of making a decision, whereas sometimes you just need to commit and go all in on it, don't you? Well, thank you for sharing that. I measure success by?
The company I keep. The people I'm spending time with, how much time, who I have to seek advice from, who I'm helping.
Yeah, love that answer. And it's so true because sometimes if you spend time with mood hoovers or people that give you energy, it's just so different, isn't it? So choosing wisely who you spend your time with is so important. If there was one thing I could change about entrepreneurship, it would be?
The degree of financial comfort it requires to get into the arena.
Great point. Thanks, Morgan. Yeah, that's a really good one. Well, we've warmed you up quite nicely there, and I'm really excited to dig into your career backstory. But before we talk about business, do you mind sharing, Morgan, a bit about what your upbringing was like and just sort of the earlier Morgan and how your upbringing influenced the sort of career you've gone on to have and the leader that you are today?
Yeah, so I mean, I come from quite a creative family, actually. everyone in my family loves sort of fashion and clothing, and that goes up to sort of grandparents on both sides who were themselves quite culturally distinct and yet sort of had that in common. And aunts, uncles, family, I mean, everyone has a sort of love of fashion and clothes. But in terms of industries, we worked in different ones. So family members in advertising, architecture, film, music, design, the arts. But there is really a common theme of working in creative industries. And also, for the most part, some exceptions, but for the most part, working on sort of the executive side of those industries. So working with the numbers and the business, but in creative spaces. And so, I mean, looking at what I do now, that must have affected me in a pretty profound way.
For sure, for sure. And you're obviously, from your accent, for those that don't know, you were born on the other side of the pond. So whereabouts did you grow up?
I grew up in New York City and outside New York City. I really spent my entire life there. I mean, I even went to university in New York City, and especially back then, when if you wanted to work in fashion and apparel, you worked in New York. There wasn't anywhere else in the United States that you could work. So I stayed after uni and worked there for nearly a decade before I moved over to Europe.
I can't think of any better place when it comes to those industries. So yeah, amazing. What a great place to grow up. It's definitely probably my favorite city to visit. I absolutely love it. We touched upon a bit about your career in the intro, but do you mind telling us, our listeners, a little whistle-stop tour of your CV getting to today? Like, which sorts of companies did you work for? What sorts of roles? Yeah, fill us in if you don't mind.
Yeah. So basically, my sort of formative years, I can cut my teeth at huge global apparel fashion company called PVH, which at that time was based in New York. And I started in sort of buying and merchandising roles for them and sort of got increasing degrees of responsibility. And, you know, by the time I left there, I was sort of managing 300 million and plus in revenue because, you know, in the US, the scale is really just a lot bigger. And it was great. I mean, I learned from some incredible people, but then I was looking for a pattern interrupt, really. So I went to INSEAD for a year. I wanted to do more in e-commerce and was seeing that as sort of a discrete discipline with its own ways of transacting and marketing. And so while at INSEAD, I did a little bit of Farfetch. It was very early days of Farfetch. But ultimately, INSEAD has very, very strong connections with LVMH. A lot of the top executives at LVMH have gone to INSEAD. And so there's a real kind of feedback loop there. And so having talked to them over the course of my time there, I was then appointed to one of the few LVMH maisons that have an office in the UK, which was Thomas Pink. Because at that point, I had married my husband. We were settled in London. So I took a director role at LVMH for a couple of years, but then I really had built this desire to pursue entrepreneurship and startups. And I got a taste for that at INSEAD, which is very much that kind of energy. And then also at Farfetch. And I had met Ben Farron, who's the founder of Spoke, right when I moved to the UK after business school. And we had sort of kept in touch for a couple of years. And I decided I could do one crazy thing. So I went to Spoke when it was tiny, tiny early days as COO and had an amazing ride there, stayed there for a handful of years. And then from there, I joined Tala.
Amazing. Oh, I can't wait. So we'll talk a bit more about the Spoke experience in a minute. But in terms of the earlier moves you made in the earlier parts of your career, what was the most sort of influential or the biggest learning from that earlier point? And on the flip side, I'd also love to hear about some of the biggest challenges you faced in those earlier bits, just some of those reflections.
So I think the biggest learning for me was, first of all, working in a big company early days meant that I really learned the kind of fundamentals of the industry, what it meant to trade, what it meant to work in the supply chain, how one actually got garments from ideation to the customer and all the points in between in a really structured way from big, successful businesses that weren't easy businesses. So they had remarkably intelligent people running them in a very organized way, you know, sort of titans of the industry in New York that I got a front row seat to. And so that was an incredible learning process. It's hard to really quantify that actually. But the other aspect of it, which I come back to all the time now, most of what I was doing in those years was in wholesale. And wholesale is a very sales focused industry, right? You are B2B and everything you do is within the engine of sales, right? Like first thing in the morning, 8 a.m., we're checking our sales flash all the way through to dinner that evening when we're taking clients out in New York. And it was incredible muscle for me to build around sales because no matter where you are, your company is going to survive if you're in this kind of business on its ability to grow and preserve revenue. And building a muscle of thinking about it all the time and weaving it into everything you do was an incredibly powerful lesson for me.
Yeah, amazing. You can really see the grounding you get from those sorts of bigger companies and how that has, you know, that has stayed with you. But clearly you've had that entrepreneurialism, that spark from INSEAD that you've carried forward in the recent years of your career. I wanted to ask you about Spoke. I mean, you spent 4 years there as COO. As you mentioned, you joined early in the journey, which must have been exciting, sort of nerve-wracking as well. Tell us a bit about that experience and I guess why you chose them when you did. And I'd love to learn a bit more also about your role as COO, because we have a lot of COOs that listen to this, a lot of aspirational COOs as well. So before we come on to talk about that, maybe just if you could explain the role you had and what that involved.
Ben and I were really sort of a team of two, a sort of exec team of two that sat on the board there. And then so in some ways, it's not that dissimilar to Grace and I now. But the difference really was that I had about half the business reported into me and half the business reported into Ben. I had the kind of property, HR, customer service, warehouse sorts of functions you would expect from a COO. But crucially, I ran the product functions there, right? And product, not the digital sense, but is in our case, the fashion and apparel side of things. So the designing and the making and the selling and the buying and so on. And that made a lot of sense. I mean, you and your listeners will know better than anyone that COO is hard to define, right? It means different things inside different businesses. And it's hard to have sort of a clear definition of COO, but it tends to be the sort of engine of the business, the part of the business that looks after the thing that is the core of what that business does. And in our case, we made and sold clothes, and that's the part of the business that I had experience in. So that's what I looked after there.
Amazing. And in your opinion, because there are these people that listen to this podcast that really want to become a COO, what in your opinion makes a good one? As you say, they all come in all different shapes and sizes, but what are the core characteristics or traits or experiences that really work for them? And do you have any advice for anyone looking to become one?
So I would say from a skill set perspective, COOs tend to do well when they are organized, structured thinkers. They tend to be good planners. They tend to be quite good grafters, people who like to get on with the doing side of things. But I also think, alluding to what I just said about your being the person that's looking after the core function of the business, you need to have some experience at doing it more than perhaps some other areas doing the thing, not just working in operations, but working in operations on the thing that your company does, right? So I could have been a COO at a tech company. It would have been very hard for me to translate that to being COO of Spoke, where I was managing the making, selling, designing of clothes, which is a very specific set of operations around it. And so I think COO, it follows very naturally in some ways from career journeys, because you will have tended to have built a sort of breadth of experience in that area and taking on increasing amounts of responsibility as time goes on. But certainly a thread that weaves around it is somebody who is hardworking, organized, clear thinking, structured, likes to get stuff done.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It often is the glue that holds a company together and is thrown in to solve multiple problems at any one time. So yeah, it's so true. You've obviously made that transition from being a COO to being a CEO. That's a move that I guess a lot of people look to make. How did you find that transition? Were there particular bits that were harder for you as somebody making that move?
No, not really. I think it probably depends on the kind of COO and various structural specificities to your COO role. As I say, Ben and I were a team of two, Grace and I are a team of two. In both cases, thus, like the founder and I work very, very closely together. We're collaborative across almost every area of the business. You know, we were really sounding boards for each other, even in areas that we weren't discreetly responsible for. And so that made for quite a smooth transition to the CEO role. I would say in both cases also, in all likelihood, you're managing a large team. You're responsible for inspiring a team, for helping them to do their best work, from protecting them against some of the unnecessary lowest of the lows. You're responsible for being a strategic partner in the business and doing some really big picture thinking, but you also are responsible for channeling that into some really practical prioritization, being very good at multitasking so you can switch from, you're a COO, you could spend half your morning on some tiny little problem and then your afternoon on some very big picture problem, right? And that's the same as a CEO. And again, I would say this probably depends a little bit on, you know, the structure of your COO role. But for me, in both cases, managing a board and investors was parallel to both roles. So there really are a lot of similarities.
Yeah, great. I mean, that's really reassuring. I guess, as you say, a lot depends on the makeup of the founder versus the COO and CEO. But in many cases, these can be very transferable. So thank you so much for sharing your experience. We're going to come on to talk about Tala, which I know our audience will love to hear more about the business and your role within it. But just before we come on to that, I wanted just to ask about the fashion industry, because it's what you've known. You've seen it on both sides of the pond, in big corporates and startups, but it is notoriously a difficult industry to break into. So there are going to be people listening to this that would probably have a real passion for fashion, but have never worked in the industry and would love to. Do you have some tips on anyone that's looking to break into the industry? And how did you find getting into it originally? Was it a struggle? Any learnings would be gratefully received.
Yeah, I love this question. It's something that I have spent so much time thinking about in my 20s, because I did find it really hard to break into it. And I found it so hard that at one time I was committed to like writing blogs about it or what have you, and life just sort of got in the way. And a lot has changed since then. You know, I think when I started, I'm not even sure LinkedIn existed, but there isn't one straight answer. Back then, one of the easiest ways to get in, and I think some of these things still exist, were the training programs at the big companies. So somebody like an Arcadia probably runs a just out of uni kind of buyer's admin course, sort of a thing. Those are still really good to do if they exist, and they can be very hard work, and I don't think they pay very well typically. But you only have to do it for sort of a year, year and a half to get those kinds of skills that are very then transferable to a smaller company or maybe a startup. And then right out of the gate, they know that you're going to have some tools. But I think those exist more in sort of product roles like design, buying, merchandising, and so on. If you want to work at a company like Tala, obviously a lot of what we do is in marketing, social media. I'm not sure there are yet training programs for those kinds of roles. If there are, I would encourage it. But if there aren't, I think, you know, the beauty of the industry today is there is a lot of opportunity for sort of micro entrepreneurship. So if you want a career in social media, building your own social media following and having some marketing traction, whether it's for a business you've started for yourself or a friend you're helping out with, just being able to show some of those learnings, even at a small scale. Similarly, if you want to go into website development, if you take on an e-commerce site of your own and build it out and just have a bit of fun and a bit of a play, I don't think there's an expectation that you're going to be doing it at a very expert level. But these tools are a lot more democratic now than they were. And so just being able to demonstrate like the passion for it and a bit of like interest in it, it would probably go quite a long way on your CV, which at that point, it's really very green, you know?
Yeah, great advice, Morgan. Thank you. I'm sure there'll be people listening to this keen to have a go at that. And I think, yeah, again, if you've got a real passion for something, that there are so many opportunities now to showcase that passion, whether it's, as you say, through starting your own business or your own social profile or connecting with amazing entrepreneurs in the space on LinkedIn. I think these things are so much more, they're much easier to do than they were 20, 30 years ago. Coming on to Tala then, you joined as MD in 2021 and were made CEO last year. So congrats on an amazing run already. Do you mind sharing a bit about why you joined Tala when you did? What was it about the business, the mission that kind of hooked you in?
Yeah, so I get asked this question a lot. It's a very easy one for me to answer. It's really two things. One, Grace, as a person, I found her very, very impressive on paper, obviously, and if you Google her and the things she's accomplished, especially at a young age. But even more than that, in some ways, was the conversations that we had together in those early days, her clarity of vision, how structured she was, how committed she was, how hardworking she was. She was incredibly impressive. And when you do what I do, your relationship with the founder is so important. And I just thought, this is somebody who I would love to work with. And then the other part that was really persuasive for me was product market fit. Tala had incredible traction with its customers from day one. And a lot of that was really organic traction. And in a world where there are so many sort of D2C brands that have sprung up on Meta ads or what have you, which have become prohibitively expensive and have made it very hard to scale these companies, Tala really was an exception in what I was looking at in terms of its ability to just draw customers in organically.
Yeah, I mean, I can only echo, I mean, I don't know Grace as well, but it was such a joy to interview her. She was so impressive, so generous with her time and advice, and so honest about her learnings. It really didn't surprise me. When I saw you'd made that move, I could see how you two would work incredibly well together. And what she has achieved and then what you've gone on to kind of lead is really amazing. But there are probably going to be people listening to this that don't know what the business is all about. And so we'd love for you to share what Tala is today. And maybe if you don't mind, give us a little bit of an elevator pitch for who the products are typically for.
So Tala sells activewear and high quality elevated basics that are thoughtfully produced and competitively priced, mostly for women ages sort of 18 to 35. It's apparel that really reflects our demographics needs. You know, our customer wants to look good all the time. So the pieces need to be flattering, but they also need to be high quality and relevant. And she refuses to be uncomfortable. I think this is something that really emerged from the pandemic when we were all starting to dress a lot more casually as we came out of the pandemic, wanting to hold on to that level of comfort, but equally wanting to elevate our look and maybe not just be in our like at home clothes all the time. And our customer just doesn't want to make compromises. You know, she wants to have all of those. She's hardworking and busy, and she needs her clothes to work hard for her too. So they're really made to take her through her day, whether that's starting with a dog walk in the morning, going to the coffee shop, then to work, Pilates, maybe to meet girlfriends. A lot of our pieces are multi-way. They have a lot of very thoughtful features around them. And so the pieces themselves and layering the pieces gets her like an effortless outfitting that takes her really from one point to another throughout her day and ensuring that she's feeling her absolute best throughout.
Love that. And yeah, I see Tala products you see people wearing them all the time. So I'm sure lots of our listeners will be very familiar with the brand, but thank you for sharing for those that aren't. As I mentioned, Grace was a great guest and is very inspiring, you know, just a figure for a lot of people. So it doesn't surprise me you've created this great working relationship. But yeah, how would you describe that dynamic? As you say, founder to CEO partnerships are really important to get right. So how do you describe it and how does it work in reality? How do you divide roles and responsibilities?
So yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think Grace and I didn't know each other before Tala. I didn't even really know of her. And so our first conversations together were really about like our values and the kind of company that we wanted to build. You know, I think my CV in a way was what it was on paper, and she could certainly get references for all of that. But a lot of our conversations were dominated by the culture we wanted to create, where we wanted to go to work, and what we wanted to achieve. There was a big part of that that was around growth and scale. We were really aligned in terms of what we thought Tala could be in the longer term, but also about the environment, the culture, the team, all of those things and what we were looking for. Those conversations really bonded us, and a lot of that is still what bonds us together today. You know, I would say obviously I, you know, admire Grace professionally, but I admire Grace so much as a human, really, in the ways that probably the public gets a glimpse into in her social media, but I have the good fortune to experience day in and day out. The strength of her character is so incredible. And, you know, she and I have really been through it together too. We've definitely been through some difficult times where we saw what the other was made of. And fortunately, that was reasonably early on, but also I see it every day. I mean, she still blows me away with the strength of her character. And I think that has really bonded us on this mission. And she puts a lot of trust in me. She delegates a lot to me. And so I would say also really kind of core to our relationship is the responsibility that I feel to be worthy of that trust and to look after it, especially in a context where she is really delegating so much to me. And so I guess when we talk about like how what that means for our roles day to day. So I sort of do the day to day running of the company, the team reports into me. I generally manage the board, but we also work incredibly collaboratively every day. So we're in constant dialogue around sort of every software platform you can imagine, 7 days a week. And we structurally, we would collaborate on sort of big picture strategic things, of course. So channels, markets, categories, the sort of big decisions the business is going into, calendar, partnerships, big brand implications for the company, we would structurally and sort of formally collaborate on. Anything that affects the sort of pace of scale or direction of the brand, she and I collaborate on in a fairly structured way. Day to day, she's very close to the creative decisions in the company. So both on the marketing side of things and the product side of things. And I would say I probably over-index towards KPIs, managing the board and our investors, managing the team. But my background is in product and I, you know, I've always worked for amazing brands. So I definitely still spend my time in those areas too.
Sounds like a perfect combination there in terms of how you divide your time and really complementary skills. And, you know, as you mentioned, trust is everything. And I think it's often a really important inflection point for a business when a founder is maybe ready to step aside as CEO, often stay involved in important ways, but it can often make or break a company if you get that hire wrong. And clearly this transition of Grace kind of handing over the reins CEO to you has been a real success. So I'd love your advice for any other founders that might be at this point in their journey about how you can ensure that smooth transition. What worked for you and, you know, what other pointers would you give?
Yeah, I feel really well positioned to answer this because I am not sure, just from stories I've heard and things like that, that I've ever seen this done as well as Grace does it. And so I would say there really are two main ingredients. One is trust. So you have to trust that the person that you're bringing in is really somebody that can be in the room when you're not there, can be making decisions when you're not there, that you really can walk away because you have faith in them. And to some extent, trust builds over time, but you have to make sure there's enough of it there on day one so that as founder, formerly CEO, you're not meddling too much. The team needs to know where to look for leadership. And I am a big believer that alignment is the fastest path to success, right? There's so many ways to get this quote right answer, but you have to be moving as a company in a single direction. And so the team needs to know who is leading them, who is giving them direction, and that the new incoming CEO is that person and has that authority from the founder. And for that to happen, the trust has to be there. The second ingredient is delegation. And, you know, you have to actually give over the role. You do have to give it up. And I think they sound like sort of the same thing, because obviously trust is a very important part of delegation. But in my observation of Grace, I think the other really important aspect of delegation is belief that your time, genuine belief that your time is better spent elsewhere. if you are giving up the CEO role reluctantly for whatever reason, and I think that there are really good historical examples we can look at here too, whether it's like Steve Jobs or Elon Musk, you know, times when founders were removed from their CEO roles, or even if you go sort of willingly, but you wish you still had it or had those responsibilities, you're not going to let go and you're just going to make for a confusing situation. But if you have something else to turn your attention to, which you genuinely believe is a better use of your time, then the feedback loop will keep working. You won't want to be meddle because you'll be called elsewhere. And that's what I think has worked so well in Grace and my partnership.
It's such an important lesson there for our audience. Thank you so much for sharing that, Morgan. I hope anyone else going through this will take heed to that great advice, because it's worked beautifully well, it seems. So yeah, really, really appreciate you sharing that. You mentioned a lot has happened since you joined the business. So many positives, record sales, you've scaled the team, you've fundraised lots of money. Can you give a snapshot of the evolution of the business, of where it's been and is today? And what have been your personal highlights?
Yeah, I mean, we are virtually unrecognizable operationally from the company that I joined 3 years ago. We are the same in our mission and our values, but we are in many more marketing channels. We have many more products. The team has more than 4x'd since we joined. Revenue has obviously grown a lot over the period. You know, when we started, we were still in lockdown. We didn't have an office. So we're now in sort of our second building and taking on more and more space over time. And we are truly operationally unrecognizable from where we were 3 years ago. What's been the highlight? I mean, there have been a lot, really. And I don't say that glibly. The truth is, people will sort of come up to me and say, "Wow, you guys have done so well and what an incredible journey." And the thing I always say to them is, it's never felt easy. There's never been a single day where I'm like, oh, this is like a breeze. The wins are always hard won for various reasons, but that doesn't mean that they're not a ton of fun when they happen. We're really lucky in that we have a product that resonates so well with our customers. And so when we drop a new collection, we can have some very exciting days. And for the whole team, those moments are amazing. But probably the biggest highlight would have been at the end of October when we dropped our outerwear collection and we did £1 million in revenue in an hour. That was a really big moment.
Wow. Every other e-commerce business would be so envious of that's incredible.
Yeah, it was wild. And people said to me afterwards, like, did you know that was going to happen? And the thing is that, you know, I always say, well, we bought the stock, right? So we obviously had some indication that it could happen. But actually, you know, the reason it was such a highlight wasn't just the sort of £1 million in an hour and getting to shout about that and the excitement around that. It was also that in order to do that £1 million, we had to buy that stock. You know, we've had big days before, but that was fast even for us. And we had a board who in advance supported us buying that much inventory, who believed in us and also said, look, if it doesn't work out, it's not going to be the end of the world, right? And so reflecting on that moment and everything that it took to get there was partly also having a really supportive board and investors. It was also, I actually, little known fact, I wasn't there the day that it happened. It was half term and I was with my children. And of course I was like live on Slack, you know, the whole day, like watching it all unfold, the website up and Slack up. But for me, that was its own kind of joy too. I mean, there's nothing better than being with the team on the days like that, when they see their work come to fruition and feel the joy. And we see the customer responding in a big way. Like, it is the best, but there's also a certain kind of pride that comes from watching it from a distance too, that knowing like I could be on leave that day and we could have people getting the website loaded and the marketing channels loaded and all of the different complexities that it takes to make a day like that happen. And then I could watch from the sidelines. Like, there were so many reasons why it was just like a highlight.
the culmination of everyone's hard work. And yeah, what a fantastic experience. Oh, well, many congratulations on that. I'm sure there are going to be more of those days ahead. I guess just to quickly touch on the flip side of that, which is that, you know, as you said, it's never felt easy and there have been tough times. And you mentioned in the early days of your sort of working relationship with Grace, you had to go through a lot. So do you mind just telling us a bit about those harder times and how did you get through those?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, look, as they say, there's hard times all the time, right? Some days are easier than others. When you're scaling a business, there's always going to be some challenges. I think there was one period right when I first joined when the business was a bit in transition. It was a bit lean. There wasn't a big team. There weren't a lot of resources. And that was a difficult time. I think it's also silver linings. It's a time Grace and I really got to see what the other was made of, you know, what it looks like when things are tough and the commitment that we're going to bring to the table and the hard work we're going to bring to the table. And the answer really was just in putting our heads down and doing the work. I mean, I don't think I've ever worked so hard in my life and I work hard, but it was a very intense period of time. And, you know, the way through it was just sort of, as I say, just to sort of put our heads down and to graft and to keep going. And I think on a personal note, too, I was able to do that because I had a support system at home as well. You know, at the time, I had a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. So they were still pretty little. And there was a handful of months there where I was really not holding up my share of the school pickups, the laundry, the bath time, meal cooking, all of it. And, you know, in Grace, I had an incredible partner at work and at home. I had an incredible partner who picked up the slack for me and never complained once, which meant that I had the time and also the headspace free of guilt to do it. And I think, you know, both of those are really important to share. You know, I still work hard. I still ask for a lot of my partner, but things did eventually even out. We got to a very positive, very exciting place. There was sort of a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But in that period, it really took both of those ingredients to make it happen.
Yeah, you're good. Clearly a very good team. I know firsthand how, you know, how important it is to have alignment and support on that side as well to achieve the goals, you know, the ambitious goals and get through the difficult times. So that's a really important thing to share. So thank you for doing that. Before we get to the end, sadly, kind of time is running out and I really would love to get your thoughts on culture and hiring because you have built a really strong team. You know, you talked about the joy that you felt when you hit those milestones last year. So how would you describe the culture at Tala? And anyone that might be interested in joining the business, like what do you look for in hires? And what's really important to you?
Yeah, so borrowing a term from Angela Duckworth here, but I was thinking about this the other day, I would describe us as challenging, supportive as a culture. So we're probably 95% women. The whole senior team is women. The board is women. We are very close as a team and we're very supportive of one another. There's a lot of sort of love and compliments that get thrown around between us, but we also have very high expectations of each other and of ourselves. So, you know, if I take kind of our social media team as an example, they are the friendliest, loving, like most lovely group of people who you will always want to be around. You're always having to see when you go into the office. They take care of each other. They're nice to each other. But that group gets on set and every single one of them is ferociously hitting their mark. They have their goals. They have a plan. They're making sure each other knows what to do. And they are just executing to their highest ability. And I love to see both of those dynamics. And I think it encapsulates us really well as a team. We are kind to each other, but we also have very high expectations. We're not doing any easy thing. It's a competitive space and we're a startup and all the obstacles that come with that. So we all have to be hardworking and on point, but we do it in a very supportive and kind way. And so I would say for somebody who wants to join us, it would be somebody who feels like that would be a good cultural fit for them. You know, Grace and I are both grafters. We both put a lot in. And I think the culture probably reflects that. We also believe very strongly in work-life balance and having a real life outside of work that brings you back to work, restored, refreshed, creative, inspired, both of those ingredients. And they might be out of balance sometimes, but then ultimately there's a good alchemy between the two. And the culture probably reflects that.
Love that. No, that sounds like you're getting the right balance there between creating a high performance culture where everyone feels accountable and aligned, but also making sure everyone looks after each other and themselves. And I think you get that from striking a balance. I think that's really, really powerful message. I could talk for hours to you, Morgan. There's so much to cover, so we might have to do a second round at some point. But I just wanted to kind of look ahead to 2024 and also just the broader industry. Do you have any particular predictions for 2024? I know sustainability is huge on the agenda for all companies in your space and generally, to be honest with you, all startups that we work with. Yeah, we'd love your thoughts on that topic. And then also for you and the business, what are you excited about in 2024 and beyond?
So on the sustainability front, I think, you know, the trends we're seeing will continue. I think there's going to be more and more legislation around ESG, particularly to prevent greenwashing from companies. I think ESG policy within every company will continue to be table stakes. You're not going to be able to get away with not having it. But I also think there will continue to be a spectrum of execution, you know, just as there are the customers who exist on a spectrum of caring more or less about it, there will be companies that reflect those values back to them. We're still seeing some big fast fashion companies scale at incredible pace and not necessarily embodying some of the ESG values. And so I think that's going to continue too. And we're going to see really a spectrum of all of it. In terms of what it means for us, what the year ahead means for us, I think we have a lot of incredibly exciting stuff in store. I'm going to struggle to be able to talk about much of it. Hopefully it'll be fun and surprises. And this year, more than the last three, we have some big changes afoot in how we kind of operate as a company, the channels we're in, the products we make, the markets we're in. There's some incredibly exciting things happening. I can't reveal them, but Instagram is really the best way to find out what's going on. It's the best reflection of us. If you're not an Instagram person, we do put a fair amount on LinkedIn too, but Instagram is really the best mirror of who we are as a brand. We share everything there. So that's the best place to check it out.
Okay, exciting times ahead for sure. We're on to our wrap-up questions. This is 40 Minute Mentor. So I have to ask, if you could be mentored by anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I love this question. I read biographies a lot and I tend to sort of get bits of mentorship from the various biographies that I read. So there's handfuls. But if I had to pick one, I would say probably Katharine Graham. So she was publisher of the Washington Post during the Watergate scandal. And she was really a woman before her time, working in incredibly intense circumstances with a lot of doubt. And though I think circumstances are very different from back then in a lot of ways, she would still be an incredible example in sort of tenacity, perseverance, fortitude, not sweating the small stuff, which would all still feel very, very relevant.
Fantastic. Love it. And we have a thing called a question roulette for the podcast for our guests, where we ask our audience, we let some of our listeners know that you're coming on and we've got three mystery questions. So can I ask you to choose between one, two, or three to see what they've got in store for you?
I'm a middle child, so let's go with two.
Oh, two. I think this is a good one. We haven't exactly covered this point. What would be the one thing you'd love to change about the fashion industry?
I think I'd love to see creative voices more amplified. Something that has happened over the last sort of decade with the emergence of D2C brands. And I touched on this at the start when I talked about, you know, so the democratization of entrepreneurship and how hard it can be to enter the arena. I think over the last 10 years, we've seen brands started by people who are effectively from a corporate background, who have then maybe looked to bolster creativity on the top. And the resulting companies have been very efficiently run and smartly marketed, but I'm not sure actually how innovative and inspiring the products have been. And I think we're seeing that a little bit with the longevity of those companies now. But back in the day, the great fashion brands had incredibly inspiring creative leaders. And I think that we need to get back to that a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. Fantastic advice. Thank you for sharing that. I love that. And finally, Morgan, what's the one piece of career advice that you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
So one of my closest friends back when we were in uni, her father said to me, do what you love and you will be good at it. And that has stuck with me.
Yeah, and that's a great thing to leave our listeners with, I think. Thank you so much, Morgan. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you and hear more about your amazing career and the great, great work you're doing at Tala. So thank you for sharing your mentorship. And I hope you and Grace have an amazing 2024.
Thank you, James.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. I really hope that you found it useful and inspiring. If we have left any questions unanswered, or if you have any feedback or guest recommendations for future series, then please make sure you get in touch on info@jbmc.co.uk. I often get asked by listeners how you can help us spread the word about 40 Minute Mentor. There are two simple ways you can help. Firstly, share this episode on your preferred social media platform, and LinkedIn is probably where I'm most likely to see it. And you can also leave us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Every share on social media and review left on the podcast platforms really helps us to get 40 Minute Mentor in front of new audiences and share the power of mentorship even further. Thank you so much for your ongoing support, and I look forward to seeing you again next Wednesday for even more pocket-sized mentorship.